The eighth parak builds on what we saw in the prior parak, that when somebody has a field and he donates it to the base of Mikdash, at the time that we keep the Yovel, he can redeem it. He actually has to redeem it if he wants to get him back, because if he doesn't redeem it, by the time Yovel comes, he's going to lose it. It's going to be divided up by the Kohanim. And there's a set fee. At the time that we keep the Yovel, which means the majority of Jews are living in the land of Israel, the set fee is 50 shkalim to redeem that field. If he's redeeming it, he donated it, and he's redeeming it at the beginning of the Yovel cycle, or a prorated amount of it for each year that passes by. What we're going to talk about now in Mishnah Aleph is somebody is maktish his field at a time that it is not during the keeping of Yovel. So we have the base of Mikdash. He donates a field to the base of Mikdash, but we're not keeping the Yovel because the majority of Jews are not in the land of Israel. In this instance, to redeem that field back, it's not going to be based on the set fee of 50 shkalim for a certain size of the field, but rather it's going to be based on the actual value. And the actual value is ascertained through an auction process. And that's actually going to be the subject of the first three Mishnayos in this parak relating to that auction process. So Mishnah Aleph tells us as follows. Hamakdish et sadeyu b'shashen ayovel. Somebody who's makdish his field, and it is a steachuza, something that is an ancestral field that is owned by the family, and he donates it to the base of Mikdash at a time when we are not keeping the Yovel, because the majority of Jews are not living in the land of Israel. It is going to be sold off by the base of Mikdash through an auction process, and in the auction, the donor is given not only the right, but the obligation to bid first. He's actually required to make a bid. Omrim lo, we say to him, Psachat harishon, you're going to make the first bid, and there are various reasons for this. One is stated in our Mishnah. We want him to be the purchaser because he's going to have to purchase it for a higher amount. Shabalim nostim chomesh, when it's redeemed by the Baal, the donor, the owner of that field, he's going to have to add on a chomesh. So the base of Mikdash is likely going to get a higher price. V'chol adam eino nosin chomesh, and anyone else is not going to give a chomesh. So we turn to him and require him to make the first bid. And now we're going to see something interesting, an application of this concept, that first person that's going to be the donor of that field has to make that first bid. There was a Maisa Be'echad Sheikdish at Sadeu Midnei Rasa. There was somebody who donated the field to the base of Mikdash because it was bad. What bad means is that the costs to maintain that field were more than he could reap from that field. It was a loss. Having that field, he couldn't make any money on it. He was losing money, so he donated it to the base of Mikdash. And they said, we're going through the auction process. It was a time that there was not a Yovel. Yovel was not being kept, so they go through the auction process, and he was required to make the first bid. Amru lo psachat harishon, what's your bid? Amar harei sheli b'isser, it's such a bad field. I'm only going to offer an isser, a small pittance, a small amount of money. Amar Rabbi Yossi, just as a parenthetical, lo amar ze'el kebetzaya, for not a nisa, but an egg. I'm going to redeem it for an egg. Not a lot of value in an egg. Shehekdesh nita bekesef v'beshavekesef, because when you redeem hekdesh from the base of Mikdash, you can use money, or you can use something in kind of money, in place of money, in lieu of money. For example, an egg, a table, etc. He didn't want to offer very much, but he had no option because he was the donor and he's required to make an offer in the auction, so he offered a small pittance. Amar lo, they said to him, Higiascha, you are the winner. No one else wanted the field. It was a terrible field. He had no choice to make but make the offer. So now they're turning the field back to him, and the result of it was Nimsa Mafsid Isar. He had the field beforehand, and now he has the field back. But he has lost an Easter as well, because he had to pay even that small amount. He's got the field before, and now he's got the field, but he lost an Easter because he donated a terrible field to the base of Mikdash, and he was forced to make the bid and pay off that bid. Mishnah Beis continues discussing the auction process, and we'll talk about in particular when there were multiple bids on a property that is being sold by the Beis HaMikdash, and one or more of the bidders renege on their offer. So they retract their offers. What happens in that situation? We don't want the Beis HaMikdash to lose out on the money that people had committed to. So the Mishnah says as follows, Mishnah Beis, Amar Echad, one of the bidders says as follows, Harei hi sheli b'asher slayim, the first bid, I'll take it for 10 slayim, v'echad omer b'asherim, second bid, 20, v'echad omer b'shloshim, third bid, 30, v'echad omer b'arabayim, fourth bid, 40, v'echad omer b'chamishim, the fifth bid, I'll take it for 50, and thereafterward, chazar bo shel chamishim, the person, the highest bidder, for 50, he retracts his offer. Memashkeni min hachasav ad aser. The Mishnah tells us that we take a mashkan, literally we take collateral, it means the gizbar, the treasure in the base of Mikdash, goes into that person's house and takes property worth 10 slayim, because truth be told, the person is only causing a loss to the base of Mikdash of 10, because now the gizbar of the base of Mikdash, the treasure, is going to go to the second bidder who bid 40, so the base of Mikdash is only out 10 by that highest bidder retracting his bid. And now the treasure goes to the second highest bidder who bid 40, chazar bo shel arba'im, and now that second highest bidder, he retracts his bid also. He reneges. So he is causing damage of 10 slayim as well, because there's the third bidder, the next bidder down, who offered 30. Mashkeni min hachasav ad aser. So the gizbar is going to only take 10 collateral or assets worth 10 slayim from the 40 Selah bidder, because he's only causing 10 Selah damage to the base of Mikdash. And now he goes to the bidder who offered 30. And he reneges as well. Chazar bo shel shloshim. So the same thing going down, he's just causing damage of 10, so they're going to take assets worth 10, chazar bo shel esrim, went to the person who offered 20, and also he reneges his offer, so they're going to go and take, again, a mashkon payment worth 10, chazar bo shel eser, now they go to the person who offered 10, and he was also chozer, he also retracts his offer of 10, so here, they're not going to take 10 from him, because they also have the field to sell, so he's going to be on the hook for 10, less what they sell the field for. So mochrim osa b'shavya, they're going to sell the field based on what they can get. For example, they can sell it for 3, v'nayfray mishal eser et hamoser, and the excess, the 7, they are going to collect from the person who bid 10. That is how it's going to work, because we have to make sure that the Beis HaMikdash is made whole. Now, a different issue, HaBaalim Omrim Be'esrim, if the Baalim, they offer 20, the Kol Adam Omrim Be'esrim, and they also have a bid from somebody else, a third party, 20, so they're each offering the same thing. Who are we going to give the land to? Says the Mishnah, Balim Kodmim, the priority will go to the owner. The owner is the one who donated that field to the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because the Beis HaMikdash is going to benefit Mimnei Shehem Osifim Chomish, because when the donor to the Beis HaMikdash also redeems that field, purchases that field from the Beis HaMikdash, he has an obligation of adding a Chomish, and accordingly the Beis HaMikdash is now going to make 24 instead of 20, 25 instead of 20, because the way the Chomesh is computed is actually a quarter of the 20, which is 5, and you add that on, it's called a Chomesh, it's a fifth of once you've added on, so once you have 25, 5 is a fifth of the 25, but it's a fourth of the 20, so because the Beis HaMikdash is going to clear 25 instead of 20, obviously the priority is going to be with the former owner when he purchases it, because he has to add on that additional chomesh. Mishnah Gimel builds on what we just saw at the end of the prior Mishnah, and we're going to get a little bit more complicated. Two new scenarios in this Mishnah. What we saw at the end of the prior Mishnah is if the bid of the original owner of the field, we'll call him the original owner or the donor of the field, when he bids to repurchase that field back, if his bid, his basic bid, not including the chomesh, is equal to a competitive bid, we are going to give it to that original owner because he's going to be adding on chomesh. That's for the benefit of the Beis HaMikdash. So that is a situation where their bids are equal. The basic bids are equal. Accordingly, with the chomesh added, that's the benefit of the Beis HaMikdash. The original owner is going to be the winner. However, what we're going to start out with Mishnah Gimel now is what happens if the highest bid, somebody else, the competitive bid, the highest bid, is more than the donor's basic bid, but is less than his total bid because he has the increased chomesh. Just to put numbers on this, if the highest bid, the competitive bid, for example, is 21, but the donor's bid is 20, but when he adds on the chomesh, it's 25. So we have that highest bid is between the donor's basic bid and the total bid amount, including the chomesh. In that situation, who is going to win that property? So we're going to go through various scenarios in that regard. Amar Echad, so we have a third party. First, we had the original owner, his bid is 20. And to compete against that, somebody else came in and said, I'm going to outbid him by one. Amar echad harehi shali be'eshri ve'achas. I'm going to outbid you. I'm going to take it for 21. So original owner, 20. Competitive bid, 21. What we are going to do here is, this is actually based on psukim, we are going to require the original owner to increase his bid by one, because we're not, even though his ultimate bid is higher, because if we look, including the Chomesh, it's 25, but his basic bid is lower. And we see that the actual value of this field is 21, because we have a competitive bid. Somebody is willing to pay higher than the 20 offered by the original purchaser. So we're not allowed to the original owner. So we're not allowed to sell it to the original owner for 20, even though with his chomesh it would be 25. We are going to require him to increase his bid by one, but we are not going to charge him a chomesh on that additional increase of one. So it comes out as follows, that when somebody offers 21, the original owner offered 20. Somebody else offers 21. So the original owner, his offer is 20 plus chomesh is 25. And because we see the actual value of the property is 21, his bid is going to increase by one to be 26. But he's not paying that additional chomesh on that additional one. So the Mishnah says as follows, Amar echad, harehi shali be'eshri v'achad. The competitive bid was 21. Haba'alim, the original owner, is going to win the bid. Nosnim eshri v'shei, she's going to have to pay 26. That's the original 20 plus a chomesh is 25, and then the increase in one, because we see the value is 21, he's going to have to pay an additional one. And similarly, we're going to go through various scenarios like that, all assuming that the original owner's bid is 20. So somebody comes in and says, Be'eshri mushtayim, I'm going to bid 22. It's two more than the original owner. Habalim knows name. The Balim are going to give their original 20 plus chomesh is 25, but they're going to have to increase by two. So Habalim knows name esrim v'sheva. They're going to have to give 27. Competitive bid is Be'eshri v'shalosh, 23. So again, the Balim are going to have to give the basic 25. That's 20 plus 5, and then increase by 3, 28. Or if the competitive bid is even one more, it's 24. The owner, prior owner, the donor, is going to have to give 29. If the competitive bid now goes up by another one, is 25. They're going to have to give 30. And just to explain what we explained already, that when we are doing this, we are increasing the bid of the original owner. He only wanted to give 20. He has chomesh, which adds another 5. That's 25. We're increasing his bid by the amount of the competitive bid. We are not going to add chomesh onto the amount that we're increasing the original owner's bid. Shein mosifin chomesh al iluyav shalzeh, based on psukim, the original owner has to match the basic price that was offered by the competitive owner, the competitive bidder. However, he does not have to pay an additional chomesh on that increased amount. And now, in the seifa of this Mishnah, we're going to add a little bit of a complexity here. We are now going to discuss a scenario where the highest bid, that's the third party bidding, is equal to the total bid of the owner, including the chomesh. So an example would be if that highest bidder is offering 25 and the original owner bid 20 plus his chomesh is 25. So if they have equal amounts at this point. So here we're going to get into this. Amar echad harehi shali be'eshrim v'sheish. If we have the competitive bid and he says, I am offering 26. So truth be told, if our original owner was only bidding 20, and with his additional chomesh, it's 25, that would not be sufficient. That third party would receive the property because he's offering 26. But our situation is not that. Our situation is if the original owner, assuming he originally bid 21, if he originally bid 21 and we have to add a chomesh onto that, so a chomesh of 21, we're going to add 5 1/4. A quarter is actually a dinar amount. So if his original bid was 21, and add a chomesh is 5 and another dinar, that's 26 1/4, 26 and a dinar. The situation is that with that competitive bid of 26, now we would add on to this original owner's bid, who we said is at 26 1/4, an additional 5, because that other party, that third party, is offering 26, and our original owner is only offering, as his basic fee, 21. So his 21 plus a chomesh gets him up to 26 1/4, plus to match that other party's bid, he has to have another 5, because we have to get him up from 21 to 26 of his basic offer, because he has to match that basic offer of somebody else. And accordingly, imratzu abalim nitan 31 v'dinar habalim kodmim. In that situation, it would be a total of 21 and an additional dinar, that's an additional 1/4. Then in that situation, the balim would come first, the original owner would come first, they would win the property. So that is assuming that the original bid of the original owner was 21. However, the imlav, however, if the original bid was only 20, in that situation, because 20 plus the chomesh would be 25, and that other party is offering 26, omrim higiyasra, we would say to that other party, you are winning the bidding. And accordingly, that third party would get it with his offer of 26, because the original owner is only offering 20, so he's never going to get high enough to match that competitive bid. Mishnah Dalet, through the balance of the Perek, deals with a certain form of donation to the Beis HaMikdash called a Cheirim. And if you have an asset, you can simply say to it, Hareza Cheirim, and that is going to be a donated asset. Now, in fact, there are actually two types of Cheirim. One is when somebody donates an item to the Beis HaMikdash. So, for example, if somebody says about a certain eved of his, a non-Jewish slave, or if he says about a certain animal of his Hareza Cheirim, that is now consecrated to the Bedek HaBayis, which is the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash. And what the Beis HaMikdash is going to do is that they're going to sell that asset and use the money for the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash, the overhead and the like. The second type of Cheirim is called Cheirmei Kohanim. When somebody says this is a Cheirim for a Kohen, he is saying that he's going to give that asset to a Kohen. And a difference between them is when you have a cheirim to the Bedek HaBayis, that item is automatically cheirim, it's sanctified, and it's owned by the Beis HaMikdash, and it stays sanctified until the Beis HaMikdash sells it. On the other hand, when you have a cheirim to a Kohen, that item is going to have a certain level of Kedusha only until it's given to the Kohen. Once it's given to the Kohen, it has no special Kedusha. But we're going to learn about, in our Mishnah, we're going to talk about the second type of Cheirim, Cheirmei Kohanim. And what we're going to learn is that you can't give away all of a certain type of asset class to the Kohen. You have to retain something for yourself. And we're going to divide up the asset classes into 3. Animals, sheep and cattle, that's going to be together one asset class. The second one are going to be non-Jewish slaves, male and female, that's second type of asset class. And the third type is a steachus, an ancestral field that you own. And we're going to see you can't give away any full asset class. You can't give away all of your sheep and cattle. You're going to have to retain some for yourself. And if you try to make a cheirim to give it all to the Kohen, none of it will be given to the Kohen. So Mishnah Dalet says as follows, Macharim Adam Mitzono Mivkaro. When somebody wants to give a cheirim to a Kohen, he can give of his sheep and cattle. That's why it says Mitzono Mivkaro, of, from his sheep and cattle, but not all of the sheep and cattle. So you can only give some of the sheep and cattle. And asset class number 2, Mei Avadav Umishfachosav HaKananim, you can give of your non-Jewish slaves, male and female, but you can't give all of them away. And asset class number 3, Misteachuzato, you can give some of your steachuz away, but you can't give all of your fields that are a steachuz away. Vim Hecharim Eskulem, and if you give away all of either asset class 1, asset class 2, or asset class 3, Einan Mukhrarim, that entire asset class is not Cheirim whatsoever. You are forced to retain ownership. You're not allowed to give an entire asset class away. Divrei Rebbe Elazar. That is the opinion of Rebbe Elazar. Now, Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah is going to learn a lesson from this. Amar Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, Maim the Gavo. If this is the case when it comes to donating a cheirim, giving a cheirim to the Kohanim, to the Beis HaMikdash, Shein Adam Rashai Lachrim Est Kol Nechasov. Here we happen to be talking about cheirim Kohanim, but in either case, you can't give a cheirim all of it away any of the asset classes in totality, you can't give the whole asset class to the Beis HaMikdash. That is not considered a chayrim whatsoever. Certainly, if you can't do that to the Beis HaMikdash, al-achas v'kama v'kama, she'adam chayav lias chas al-nechasav, certainly you have to be careful with your assets. What this means is if you can't give all of your asset or an asset class away to the Beis HaMikdash, you have to be careful with your property to not give it all away to the poor. And in fact, that is a halacha. It's discussed in the Bavli and Ksuba, so also Yerushalmi. There's a difference between them. But we'll stick with the pashtus of the Gemara and the Bavli, that there was an etakana from Usha. That's one of the places that the Sanhedrin was after it was no longer at the Beis HaMikdash. So the Sanhedrin went into 10 Galios. It wasn't 10 different places because some were repeat places, but they moved 10 times. And one of the places was called Usha. And the Gemara and Ksuba tells us, but Usha Iskinu, in Usha they instituted, when somebody gives away to tzedakah, you're not allowed to give more than 20% of your assets away to tzedakah, because you may come to need the assets. You shouldn't give away too much of them, because that could put you into financial risk. So what we're learning here is if you can't give a chayrim to the Beis HaMikdash of an entire asset class, kavachomer, you have to be careful to not give away too much of your assets to the poor, to people. To people, you can't give it to the Beis HaMikdash. Certainly you can't give it to people so that you would endanger yourself financially. Mishnah Hay continues talking about the Cherme Kohanim, the Cherim that is made and given to a Kohen. And we're going to initially discuss things which cannot be made a Cherim. So Mishnah Hay starts out as follows. Hamachrim Benobito. Somebody says, I am designating my son or my daughter as a Cherim to be given to the Kohen, or Avdo Vishiv Chaso Ayivrim, or his Jewish slave, male or female, ustembikna, so not a stay achuza, that's an ancestral field, but a stay mikna is that somebody bought from somebody else, the real owner of the field, he bought a field, and it is his only up until the yovel. So it's a stem mikna, not a stem achuza. Comes the yovel, the ownership is going to revert to the original bona fide owner. If anyone attempted to make a chayrim of any of those assets, einan muhramim, they do not become a chayrim. They do not become owned by the Kohen or the Beis HaMikdash. Shein ada machrim davar shein oshola. You cannot make a chayrim of something that you do not own. And for these purposes, you don't own your children, you don't own a Jewish slave, and you don't own a stay mikna. Stay mikna is only effectively leased to you up until Yovel. You don't have full ownership of it. And now in the Sefer of the Mishnah, we're going to talk about certain people, not the assets themselves, but certain people who cannot make a cherem to Kohanim. These people, we're talking about Kohanim and Levim, can they make a cherem to Kohanim? But even Kohanim and Levim, they can make a cherem to the Beit HaKabayis. But the question that we'll grapple with in our Mishnah is, can they make a cherem to Kohanim? So the Mishnah says as follows, it's actually a machlokis, Kohal minim ulevim, Einan machrimim divi Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is the view, he has a limud, a detailed limud, that neither Kohanim nor Levim can make a cherim to Kohanim. The cherim to Kohanim, that cannot be done by either a Kohen or a Levi. And Rabbi Shimon Omer, he agrees in part and disagrees in part. Ha Kohanim einan machrimim. When it comes to Kohanim, I agree with you, a Kohen cannot make a cherim to a Kohen. The Chayrim Kohanim, the way a Chayrim Kohen works is that, according to Rabbi Shimon, when you make a Chayrim to a Kohen, it's not given to all the Kohanim, it's given to a designated Kohen. And accordingly, according to Rabbi Shimon, you can't make a Kohen, cannot make a Chayrim of a Kohen, because it's just going to revert back to you. So it just doesn't work that way. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kohanim Einam Achrimin, Shacharamim Shalahem, because the Chayrim is owned by the Hem. The Kohen that makes the Chayrim, it's just going to come back to him as ownership. So that doesn't work for a Kohen, but when it comes to a Levi can make a Cherim because the Cherim goes to a designated Kohen, it doesn't come back to the Levi. So both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon agree that a Kohen cannot make a Cherim to Kohanim, but The machlokis is, how about a Levi? Rabbi Yehuda says a Levi also cannot make a cheirim, and Rabbi Shimon is of the view that a Levi is different than a Kohen, and a Levi can make a cheirim. And now we're going to discuss further this machlokis, which we're going to try to sharpen the machlokis, because truth be told, we have a machlokis between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, but in certain circumstances, Rabbi Yehuda is going to agree with Rabbi Shimon, and in another circumstance, Rabbi Shimon is going to agree with Rabbi Yehuda. So continuing in the Mishnah, Rabbi Omer, Nirin di Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. When it says nearing, it appears the words, the view of Rabbi Yehuda, that neither a Kohen nor a Levi can make a cheirim. He is saying that the view of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon agrees with. It's nearing Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, le Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon would agree with Rabbi Yehuda, ba karkaos. When it comes to karkaos, he would agree that a Levi also, not only Kohen, but a Levi as well, cannot make a cheirim to a Kohen. Why is that? Because when it comes to karkaos, the land that they own, it says in the Pasuk, Shne'emar ki achuzas olam hulahem, when it talks about the fields of the cities that were given to Kohanim and Levim, it says that it has to be their achuza in their ownership for eternity. And that means neither a Kohen nor a Levi can depart, including donating that sadeh to a Kohen, making a cheirim of that field, the cheirim of Kohanim, because they would lose it forever. They would never revert back to them. Accordingly, Rebbe is telling us that Rebbe Shimon agrees with Rebbe Yehuda that a Levi, even a Levi, cannot make a cheirim when it comes to karkaos. And the reverse, v'divrei Rebbe Shimon, it says that the view of Rebbe Shimon that a Levi can make a cheirim, that is nearing the Rebbe Shimon to Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe Yehuda is going to agree with Rebbe Shimon in a circumstance, b'metaltlin, when it comes to movable property. And the reason is because a Levi can sell movable property, he can also make a cheirim of movable property. Sheina charamim shalem, because the cheirim is not theirs, which means that a Levi, when they make a cheirim of movable property, it's not going to them. When they donate it, it's going to a specific Kohen. That's why a Levi, both Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda agree, so even Rabbi Yehuda would agree with Rabbi Shimon that a Levi can make a cheirim when it comes to metaltalin, because it's not going to revert back to the Levi. He's making it, it's designating it for a Kohen, but still a Kohen cannot make a cheirim of metaltalin, because the cheirim is owned by the Kohen. So he would just be donating it to himself. It would not be effective in a Kohen making a cheirim when it comes to metaltalin. But Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon again would agree that when it comes to the metaltalin, a Levi can make a cheirim when it comes to metaltalin. Mishnah Vav starts out with bringing a nafkamin, a difference between the two types of cheirim we've been talking about, the cheirim bet akabayis, the item that somebody declares to be a cheirim that goes to the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash and will be sold by the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash, and the money will be used for Beis HaMikdash purposes. And the second cheirim that we've been talking a lot about, cheirim kohanim, when somebody designates an item to be given to a Kohen or kohanim, and he has to give that item. So the difference is, do you have to give the item itself, or can you redeem the item and give the value instead? So the Mishnah tells us as follows, cheirim kohanim ein lahem pida. When it comes to the cheirim that somebody is giving to a Kohen, it cannot be redeemed, which means he cannot give money, even the same value, in its stead. You have to give the exact item that you declared as a cheirim to the Kohen. Elan, the tanim lakohen katruma. Just like when it comes to truma, you have to give the truma of your produce to the Kohen. You can't give the monetary value. So too, when somebody gives a cheirim to a Kohen, a Kohanim, he declares an item that is going to be a cheirim to Kohanim, he has to give the item itself. Now, this contrasts with the cheirim of the Bedek Habayis. When somebody donates an item, he says, this is a cheirim to the Bedek Habayis. The whole reason he's giving an item is that the Beis HaMikdash is going to sell that item. The Beit HaMikdash doesn't need the item. It needs the funds for the overhead of the Beis HaMikdash. Accordingly, there, you can give the value instead of the item. Now we're going to see a machlokis. If somebody simply declares an item a cheirim, but he doesn't designate which type of cheirim, is it going to be a cheirim to the Bedek Habayis, or is it going to be a cheirim to the Kohen, which is going to be the default? And on this we have a machlokis, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseiro Omer, Stam Charamim LeBedek Habayis. Stam Charamim means when somebody just says something is a cheirim, but he doesn't distinguish for what type of cheirim it is. The default, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Mateira, is it's going to go to the Bedek HaBayis. It's going to go to the treasury, the base of Mikdash, and not to a Kohen or Kohanim. Why? Based on a Pasuk, Shenemar, Kol Cheirim Kodesh Kodashim Hu Lashem. Every Cheirim is going to be Kodesh Kodashim, is going to be designated to the base of Mikdash, will go to Hashem, which means the default is, when it comes to a Cheirim, the default is goes to the base of Mikdash and not to the Kohen. V'chachamim Omrim, the alternative view, Stam Charamim, La Kohanim, if somebody doesn't designate which type of Cheirim it is, the default is going to be Stam, it's going to be to a Kohen or the Kohanim. Based on a Pasuk as well, in talking about the Stei Achuz, if somebody owns a field, Shneamar, Kistei HaCheirim La Kohen, Tia Achuz Asol. It says in the Pasuk that this Sadeh is going to be HaCheirim La Kohen, it's going to be going to the Kohen. So they each rival the Ram. So Psukim, so Chachamim now explain the first Pasuk, Im Kain, if you're saying that this Cheirim is going to go to the Kohen, Bama Nehmar, what are you going to do with the first Pasuk that was brought, Kol Cheirim Kodesh Kodeshim Hu Lashem, which seems to say that every Cheirim goes to the Bedek HaBayis, it doesn't go to the Kohanim. That is teaching us a different halacha, which will be the subject of the next Mishnah, fairly complicated, and that is as follows, Shuchal al Kodshe Kodashim al Kodshe Kalim, that it will take effect when somebody has a korban. He has designated a korban, and it could be either Kodshe Kodashim, the higher level of Kedusha, like an Ola, or it could be a Kodshe Kalim, a lower level of Kedusha, but also going as a korban like a Shlamim, and somebody says that will be a Cheirim. Even though typically you can't do something with a korban, it's a designated animal already, it's got to be brought as into the base of Mikdash, but the fact that somebody says that animal that I designated as a korban, be it kodesh kodashim, kodesh kalim, is a cheirim, that will be effective. How is it effective, and how do we evaluate it, and how much does he have to give to the base of Mikdash? That is the subject of the next Mishnah. Mishnah Zion starts out by repeating what we saw at the end of the prior Mishnah. Macharim adam es kodashav, somebody can put a cheirim, can say that my kodashav are his korbanos. He can say these korbanos, they've already been designated to be brought as korbanos in the base of Mikdash, but you can put a cheirim, an effective cheirim on them. Whether it's ben kodshe kodashim, ben kodshe kalim, whether it's kodshe kodashim, the higher level of kedusha, like an olo, or kodshe kalim, like a shlamim. Now, it can't possibly be that that animal that has already been designated to be brought as a korban, that that itself is a cheirim. So we have to explain exactly what is going on, because if you committed an animal to be brought as kodshe kodashim, it's brought as kodshe kodashim. If you brought it as, if you committed to bring it as kodshe kalim, you have to bring it as kodshe kalim. So it has to be that the value of those korbanos you are committing to give the money to the base of Mikdash, and those korbanos have to be brought as you committed to. So it's going to go like this. It depends what category of korban it is in. Whether it's kodesh kodashim, kodesh kalim, we're going to divide it between whether it was a neder or nedava. The way a neder works is somebody says, I am going to bring a XYZ korban. For example, somebody says, I'm going to bring an ola, and thereafterward he chooses the animal that's going to bring his korban ola. So that is a designated korban. It's kodesh kodashim. That animal is designated, but because the person said, I am going to bring a korban ola, he didn't limit it to that specific animal. And if something happens to that animal, this individual is on the hook to replace it. That's how a neder works. So accordingly, im neder, if the underlying korban that the person is saying, I'm going to put a cheirim, I'm going to make it into a cheirim, if it's an underlying korban of a neder, that he would have to replace it if something happens to it, no sein es adam, he'd have to give the full value of that animal. Why? Because he's responsible if it gets lost. So to him, that animal has full value. And when he says, I'm going to give it as a cheirim, the animal itself has to be brought as a korban as it was designated originally to fulfill the neder. But he also has to give the monetary value of that animal to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Bedek HaBayis. On the other hand, if it's the other type, the second type of korban, im nedava, if when he designated it, wasn't that he said, I am going to bring an animal, and thereafterward he designated a specific animal that he's going to be responsible if something happens to that animal, but in nedava is he designates a specific animal. I'm going to bring that animal as my korban ola. Because of that, because he's only designating a specific animal and not accepting upon himself the obligation first, his obligation is limited to that animal. And if something happens to that animal, he is not responsible to replace it accordingly. if this type of animal, now he says it's a cherim and the underlying animal is a nedava, there is still some value to him, even though it's not going to be the full value, and that's the value of somebody who wants to bring a korban to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Somebody who is not obligated in bringing a korban, but has that opportunity, how much would he pay to bring that korban? So no sin es tovaso. He has to bring its benefit to him. What is the benefit to him? The amount he would be willing to pay in order to bring this gift, this korban to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, even though he's not obligated to do so. And here would be an example. Shor ze olav. Somebody says, he designates, and this is a nadava, this shor, this ox is going to be my ola. Shor ze ola. This is going to be my korban ola. So that's a nadava, it's not a neder. If something happens to the animal, he's not going to be responsible for it because it's limited to that specific shor. But still, he would desire somebody, if you go up to somebody on the street, you'd say, how much would you be willing to pay? You're not obligated to bring a korban ola, but how much would you be willing to pay for this animal to bring it as a korban ola? It's not going to be full value because he's not obligated to bring it, but it's going to be something because he'd want to bring a korban. Accordingly, we appraise the situation. Omdim kama adam rotz eliten b'shor zeh lahalosa ola shein or ashai. We would appraise the situation. How much would somebody be willing to pay for this shor, for this ox, in order to bring it in a korban ola, even though he's not obligated? If he's obligated, he's going to have to pay the full value. If he's not obligated, he's going to pay less than the full value. And accordingly, in this situation, when somebody says there's a cherim on an animal that's been designated as a korban, and that underlying korban was a nedava, he's going to have to bring the tova, the benefit, to him or a third party that we would appraise, how much they would be willing to pay for this animal in order to bring a korban that they're not obligated to bring. Now we're continuing HaBechor. A Bechor is the firstborn of certain types of animals that have to be given to the Kohen. And it has to be given to the Kohen whether it is Bein Tamim, Bein Balmum, whether it is a Tamim, it is unblemished, whether it's blemished, it goes to the Kohen. So we're talking about somebody who had an animal, gave birth, firstborn kosher animal, it is a bechor, and the person has not given it to the Kohen yet. But that individual, even though he doesn't own the bechor, but he can choose to which Kohen is going to give it to. So that person, still in possession of the bechor, he hasn't given it to the Kohen yet, machri mimoso, can say, this bechor, even though it's not mine, but I am going to say that I'm committing to a cherim on it. I'm going to give a certain value to the base of Mikdash. But this animal is not his. So Ketzad Podino. So how do we determine the value of this animal, this value of the cherim that the person now has to give? Now that underlying animal, again, we're not talking about the underlying animal. That is a bechor and it has to be given to a kohen. That doesn't change. The fact that the person, the owner, says, I'm going to give a cherim based on this animal, it doesn't change what has to happen with that animal. We simply have to appraise how much money he's going to additionally have to give to the Beis HaMikdash. So this is what would happen. Hapodim, those who are the assessors on behalf of the Beis HaMikdash, Omdim, they would appraise, Kama Adam Rotza Litan Bebechor Zeh, Litno Leben Bito O Leben Achoso. This individual who has the Bechor, he has to give it to a Kohen. He has, as mentioned, he can choose which Kohen it's going to go to. So somebody could approach him, not a non-Kohen. A Kohen cannot pay to get a Bechor. Let me pay you for the Bechor. You can't do that. But if we have a Yisrael come, for example, and say to this quote-unquote owner of this Bechor, I want to give you a certain amount for you to give that Bechor to my Ben Bito, the son of my daughter. In other words, his daughter married a Kohen, so his grandson is a Kohen. Or Leben Achoso, his sister married a Kohen, and they had a child, a son, and that son is which is his nephew, is a Kohen. And this Yisrael approaches this owner of this Bechor and says, I'll pay you a certain amount in order for you to earmark that Bechor to my relative. There is value there. It's not going to be the full value of that animal, but there's somewhat of a value to that animal. And accordingly, when somebody says, I'm going to give a cherim, I'm making this animal a cherim, and it's a Bechor, the Bechor again has to be given to the Kohen, but the value of that Bechor, as we've just discussed, will have to be given to the Bet HaKabayis, will have to be given in addition to the Beis HaMikdash. And now we are going to see the source, the Makor, that when somebody has a Bechor he hasn't given it to the kohen yet, that he can make it into a cherim, and he is committing to the give that quote-unquote value of that bechor to the base of Mikdash. And we're going to start with the stira between two psukim. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Kasuv Echad Omer Taktish. When it comes to the bechor, one pasuk says, when you have a bechor, you can be maktish it, but the bechor is already kadosh. Kasuv Omer Lo Al Taktish. And another pasuk says, you can't be maktish it, because as we know, it's already a bechor, so you can't be maktish it. You can't give it as a korban, you can't be maktish. So on the one hand, one pasuk says when it comes to bechor, you can be maktish it, you can sanctify it, and one says you can't, but we can't say that you can be makdish a bechor, for example, to bring it as a korban to the base of Mikdash, because the second pasuk says that you can't be makdish it. And also we can't say you can't be makdish it for anything, because the first pasuk says you can be makdish it. So it has to be, it can't be that I can be makdish this bechor to be brought as a korban, and I have to give it to the kohen. So it can't be that I can makdish it as an ola or a shlam. That's not what we're talking about. When it says that you can be maktish, taktish, that means that you can do another form of donation of that bechor, another form of donation, which is what we are talking about. Emor ma'ata, when it says the pasuk taktish, that you can sanctify it, maktisho ata hektish iloi, what you can do is you can be maktish it for its quote-unquote value, which is what we discussed before, that the value of the bechor is somebody was going to pay you to give that bechor to one of his relatives or a kohen. There is a value. It's a lower value, but it's a value. And when somebody says, I'm going to make a cherim of this bechor, that is the value that he has to give to the base of Mikdash. On the other hand, veinata makdisho hektish of mizbeach, but as we've discussed, you can't, when you have a bechor, say, I'm being makdish it to be brought as a korban, because it's a bechor already. So that's not the type of hekdesh that we're talking about. We're simply saying that the person can be making it, he can make it into echerim and have to pay the quote-unquote value to the Bet HaKabayis.